You're listening to Breast Cancer Stories. I'm your host, Eva Shea, and my co-host is Kristen Bengler. It's day 28. Every day brings unexpected changes that require constant adjustment to the new normal. We're both startled by how fast things move along. The new routine's not new anymore. Kristen's hair is already gone. Grief is heavy and constant, and we're not sure what's coming next. This podcast is about what happens when you have breast cancer, told in real time. What does it feel like to not have hair?
My head goes from being cold to being hot. It's liberating, I'll tell you that. I save a lot of time in the morning. But what it really physically feels like is, you know how your head feels when your hair is wet? It feels like that all the time. But sometimes I'll put the hat on and I'll just be like super hot. But at night when I go to sleep, it reminds me of the Ma and her kerchief and I and my cap. Just settle down for a long winter's nap. Looks almost like a swim cap, but it's made of bamboo fabric to keep my head warm at night. And then I wake up in the middle of the night and I'm hot and I take it off.
Well, you sound really happy and positive, but you've had a little bit of a rough week, haven't you?
Yeah, it's been a rough week. Last week, because my liver numbers, they gave me like 50% of one of the chemos. And then this week, my liver numbers are better. So they gave me the full dosage, which is great to battle the chemo, but it makes it harder symptom-wise. And the anemia is getting worse. Whenever I think anemia, I always think, oh, I can eat liver, I can eat iron, I can eat iron-rich foods to supplement that. So I can do that. And that can keep that side of my blood count better, I guess. But basically what the chemo is affecting, the blood cells that it's affecting, I can't do anything to fix it. That's what happens. And having had three sessions of chemo, the chemo is really in there for 4 days, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And then by that time, it's leaving your body. So now I'm on day three or four. And so after the fourth day, it's just your body fighting to build back the cells. And so right now, the chemo's in there really killing all the fast-moving cells, which is great. It's just Wednesdays are like the nights when I'm like the most tired, and then I get probably the most emotional because I'm tired. And today was, I'm trying not to cry. Today was the first day. I was in the shower this morning and I really realized I could die from this because I've always been so positive, and I am positive that nothing can take me down and I can battle this. And that if I'm just positive enough and I have good doctors and good people around me, that everything is going to be okay. But this morning it just came into my head. It was like, this could go the other way, you know? And how do you handle that if it goes the other way? And I tried not to think too long about it, but I think that I've also been so in shock that it's actually cancer, because everything happens so fast. And it hasn't even been 2 months. And since I had the diagnosis was just that I knew that I had cancer, not even knowing like what we were going to do about it. It was December 18th. And so within 3 weeks, I was in chemo and it all just moved so fast. And so I've just been really, really working on my positivity and my faith. And those people who surround me with so much love that it's hard to think that you're not going to make it.
It sounds kind of like you turned some kind of corner this morning. That was not a good corner or a bad corner, but just a corner.
Yeah, it was just kind of a reality corner. I keep thinking that if I just do the right things, it'll go away, but it won't. Maybe it will, but that's down the line. And I think that what I've been really working on this week and last week was, I know I have to have physical endurance, but I need to have emotional endurance too. And when there's certain things you can't control, it's tough. And I'm not vain about my weight or my hair or anything like that. Like, my stomach wants things that are comfortable, like healthy carbs and healthy proteins and cold fruit and frozen fruit and things like that. And those weren't things that I usually had in my diet. I usually was doing lean meats and very few carbs and just in it, just because that's what worked for my body type. And so I put on 10 pounds in a month. And that's one thing that I could really control, was how I felt and how I could make myself feel through the way that I treated my body. And I haven't been able to do that. And my doctor's glad to see that I'm gaining weight, because a lot of people lose weight because they can't eat. And so it just kind of feels like the things that I was used to having balance in, I can't do that anymore. Or I'm struggling to get there. But I was given a referral to get acupuncture by the integrative medicine specialist that I talked to last week, the doctor, and to have a nutritional doctor talk to me a little bit about what more I can do, and just, and a referral to talk to somebody, you know, a support group and stuff like that.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you, how are you thinking about being less hard on yourself for things like how you're eating?
The first thing is I have to be comfortable. And tonight I had some good protein and some brown rice and some avocado toast and some chicken. And that's all really good food, you know, and I felt better after I ate it. So I'm just trying to find the balance. And that's the only thing I can do to not be so hard on myself.
Yeah.
And I love the area that I live in. I like to walk and everything. It's just, I have no energy to do it. And so the sedentary stuff doesn't help either. And I'm just going to give myself grace and get rest. I've really learned over the last year or two that depression is caused by being sad about things in the past, and anxiety is caused about being fearful of things in the future. And so just living in the moment, everybody always says that live in the moment, but that's all you really have. And I think that going and doing the things that bring me joy, like my job and reaching out and talking to friends and just leaning on those people who just love me, and being able to feel what I need to feel in the moment and giving myself that grace to do that. It's really a lot easier said than done when you're feeling like shit. Mm-hmm. And that's your moment. That's your moment. And you're hoping that the next moment's you're going to feel better. And so you're just doing a lot of self-talk to push yourself into the next better moment.
It's just a season and you're going to get through it.
Yeah. And tomorrow I'll probably feel great. I mean, Saturday I was in here making popsicles and guacamole and rearranging things, and I felt really good.
I have to wonder if what you said earlier about the chemo taking 3 or 4 days to get out of your system is, you're on day 3 and maybe all of that stuff is just about gone from your system. And when it's gone, maybe things will turn around.
Yeah.
I'm just guessing.
So we've talked before, I think, the night of chemo and the day of chemo, they pump you full of steroid and anti-nausea medication, two different ones, before they even put the chemo in your body, you know, and you kind of marinate in that, is what they call it.
It's too bad they can't give you gravy and, you know, Thanksgiving gravy and other fluids that are just joyful, like eggnog and,
you know, my popsicles make me happy. You said it best, how can I give myself a break? I feel that so many things are in place that I just really got to walk through this. I can't sub out. And there's times when you just feel like you're exhausted and you want to sub out. And so I just have to keep remembering, this is my job. My job is to take care of myself and to go do what I'm supposed to do. Getting to go every day and play with a 1-year-old, that got me out of the shower today. That got me out of my tears. And I walk in and there's just this big smile and he runs toward me. And I mean, you know, how is that not the best day ever? And it's funny when he went from seeing me with my long hair to my short hair, and he was looking and looking. And then the next week he sees me with no hair. He thinks it's really funny and he touches my head and he kisses my puff of my head. It's about as cute as it gets. And he has a little beanie that he wears around, you know, half the time. It's just sweet.
Aww. I know.
And his parents are amazing. I couldn't be luckier to be where I am.
What's the rest of your week look like?
Let's see. Tomorrow and Friday, I'm going to go to work and I'm going to go see one of the social workers at the hospital who's going to help me fill out some information to get some financial and emotional support stuff going with Susan G. Komen and a couple other places. There's so many places that, especially with breast cancer, because it's so well known and so many well-known people have had it, there's a lot of foundations that'll help in all different kinds of situations. Some will just help with getting you a wig if you want a wig. And there's all kinds of different qualifications. He's going to help me like weed through some of that stuff so that I can just see what my options are.
I'm interested to hear more about Komen when you come back, because for a long time they were under fire for not really spending their money on anything that actually helped people.
Interesting.
And so I've had a kind of a long held opinion that that's not where you should send your money.
Uh-huh.
And so maybe you can do a little digging and...
Yeah. Well, I'm applying. There are certain income thresholds and all of that based on your family size and all of that. And they ask very specifically, is it utility? Is it your co-payments and your hospital bills? Is it your health insurance? Do you need help finding health insurance? And so they do require your doctor to send a letter in. And so it'll be interesting to see. I can tell you firsthand afterwards what I end up finding out from them. Because it's like a 3-page application. But, you know, on the last page is, what's your financial institution where we can send the money? So it'll be interesting to see. I'll be happy to tell you.
Yeah, I think that the sort of commonly held opinion is that most of their money goes toward raising awareness, which is just the visibility stuff, and not actually helping people with breast cancer. So will you do a little detective work and ask them?
Absolutely. When I meet with the social worker, I'll be sure and ask what his experience has been with that. Because he had a couple other organizations. One was Breast Cancer Angels that are here. And so I'll let you know when I find out. Because I think that's really important. If there's anybody listening to this that needs that kind of stuff, I think that it's important for them to know.
It is. And it's also important if people want to send money or donate money, that they know what it's going for and where it ends up. Because
right. Oh, absolutely.
I used to have a presentation where I talked about this, and there was a KFC chicken bucket that was sponsored by Komen, and half the bucket was pink. And I was like, this is too much.
Yeah.
That was probably 10 years ago.
Yeah.
It was a long time ago. If it's changed, I sure would love to pass the message along.
Yeah, absolutely. When I was looking into some of it, I mean, it wasn't Komen, but it was another group. I want to say it was Cancer Angels, not Breast Cancer Angels, but Cancer Angels. And it said, one of the things was you need to show proof that you have less than $1,000 of liquid assets to be able to use.
Wow.
To qualify, to be able to show that you have less than $1,000. And they were saying things like, if you need to send us your eviction notices, I can't imagine going through this with that hanging over my head. I have quite a bit in co-payments and deductibles that's already been racked up, and it's uncomfortable. And the reasons that I'm looking into this especially is I don't know how much longer I'm going to be able to work. I've already cut my hours down by about 10 hours a week. And so that comes out to quite a bit over the course of a month.
I need some help. So when you get to the point where you can only sit on the couch, then I'll give you some projects to do.
You got it. No problem. But yeah, I mean, when I have surgery, that's going to put me out for a couple months, a month or so for sure. Especially if I can't pick up a 30-pound baby.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that's all going to work out. It's just that most of these things, and it's important to know, need to be applied for and approved and confirmed while you're under treatment and while you're actually having chemo or having surgery and dealing with the cancer, and you haven't been diagnosed as cancer-free.
Mm-hmm.
Because there were things that said, if you're having reconstruction from cancer, you're not eligible. Only reconstruction. You're past the chemo, past the radiation, past the mastectomy. It's really important, I noticed today in looking at things, to be timely. And the last thing you feel like doing is that. Part of some of the emotion this week might be also like facing those things. This is a possibility. So pull up your panties and let's go look and see what the resources are and all that kind of thing.
Yeah, but it's daunting. It's work and it's daunting. And
and thank goodness that I'm educated and I've done benefits and I understand medical insurance and I understand how to go about doing all these things. I used to fill them out for people doing HR. And so I would guess that 80% of people know less than I do about it. And so that's why I'm really glad they're social workers. But I had to go in and ask. It wasn't something where they just came to me. And so I think that that's something that I would advocate for, like that hospitals say, hey, here's a social worker.
I know most people don't know that reconstruction is supposed to be paid for by insurance.
Right. I didn't know.
Yeah.
Until I really looked into it. And I found the social worker by writing a note to my oncology nurse and asking her for a prescription to get a head prosthesis or wig. And she said, well, you have to be really careful the way that you ask it. And we don't do prescriptions for it, but usually the, at least this group doesn't. But that what you do is you go in, they referred me to a shop, a wig shop that does do medical billing, that you usually pay for it out of pocket and then you get reimbursed. And I think a lot of it is because they're trying to be sure that there's a medical need for it. And I'm thinking, well, how many people really want to go get a wig? I would have to probably send them pictures of myself and show that I lost my hair due to chemo and that kind of thing.
Are wigs that expensive that you would try to defraud the wig shop by pretending you had cancer to get a wig? That just seems crazy.
There's some that are $2,000 and $3,000 that are real hair.
Oh my gosh.
Ridiculous. Yeah. If they're made of nylon fibers or whatever, they're hotter. And so they're not very comfortable. And so a lot of people sweat through their wigs. When I was looking into them, and I kind of just put it aside for now because it was a little bit overwhelming, but there's certain like net wraps that you do, and the way that they do it determines how real it looks or how uncomfortable or comfortable it is. And the real hair ones obviously breathe better. At this point, like I don't go anywhere. I'm not out dating, not going to gala events. I mean, it's COVID. Nobody's doing a whole lot. Yeah, I don't hate seeing myself in the mirror so much that I need a wig. Every once in a while, it's just a reminder, though, that I have cancer. But you know what? I'm grateful for this week that my eyebrows haven't fallen out and my eyelashes haven't fallen out. And in fact, I have one lone chin hair that always grows that still grew. So,
Old faithful.
Yeah, facial hair is still intact.
Oh boy. Okay. Well, when we lose the chin hair, we know we're really in trouble. It's like the bellwether.
Exactly. Yeah. Actually, you know, you're going to think I'm really gross, but I do have a little bag of the hair that came out that Friday night in the shower. Part of the reason is that they say that your hair always grows indifferent. And so I wanted like confirmation of what my hair looked like before and after. And they say sometimes it grows in curly, sometimes it grows in lighter or darker.
I wonder if you can make a request. Like,
I mean, hey, come on. I can. It's pretty close in there. The follicles are close to the brain, so we should be able to work something out. So I have an off week. And then I have my fourth session of the chemo. And then I have 2 weeks off. And then it starts weekly Taxol. So I'm 3/4 of the way through the tough stuff. Which is good.
That is good.
Mm-hmm. I had a friend from high school today. She's so sweet. She sent me my favorite dinner from Flower Child. And she lives in Oregon. And we hadn't talked in 25 years until recently when I was doing some health coaching with her. And there was flowers sitting on my doorstep and, you know, a dinner. And it was just like, sweet. She didn't know my day was going to be hard. Or maybe she did. Maybe she just had a feeling. I don't know. It's just a big warm hug. Love you, Eva.
Love you too. Talk to you soon.
Yeah. You cheered me up.
Oh, good. I'm so glad.
Yeah, that's a lot. Perfect. Thank you for listening too.
Thanks for listening to Breast Cancer Stories. To support Kristen, you can find us at patreon.com/breastcancerstories. There's a link in the show notes with all of the resources mentioned on this episode and more info about how you can donate. If you're facing a breast cancer diagnosis and you want to tell your story on the podcast, send an email to hello@theaxis.io. I'm Eva Shea, your host and executive producer. Production support for the show comes from Mary Ellen Clarkson, and our engineer is Daniel Cruiser. Breast Cancer Stories is a production of The Axis, THEAXIS.io.